The Last Kids on Earth and their superhero alter egos are back in the latest installment of the graphic novel spinoff series, The Last Comics on Earth, Too Many Villains. Jack, June, Quint, and Dirk face their biggest challenge yet, creating the sequel to their hit graphic novel in a mad dash, puzzle-filled race across Apocalyptia to stop the biggest evil plan in history. Hey, you know what the creators of Last Comics on Earth's evil plan is? Make me and my kids love these books. Seriously, my younger kid is a huge fan of both the Last Kids series and the Last Comic series.
It's true.
And now I'm hooked too. The whole team has created a delightful cast of characters with some fantastic kid-friendly art throughout that will appeal to readers of all ages. Buy your copy of The Last Comics on Earth in stores today. You can also visit lastkidsonearth.com to learn more. What's up, everybody? Welcome to Comic Book Club. I'm Alex.
I'm Justin.
I'm Pete.
And we are here with one of our favorite writers, Philip Kennedy Johnson. Yeah. Welcome.
Shucks. Hey, guys.
Hey.
It's been too long. Welcome to Baltimore, land of enchantment.
Oh, thank you.
I feel enchanted.
Yeah, land of burning trash.
We've been keeping an eye on your booth the entire time. It has been packed and busy. What has this con been like for you?
It's been nuts, man. I'm falling apart. I mean, I legit love this convention. It's like it's amazing people here, and it's my home con, so I see a ton of people every year. A lot of them are like, year after year. It's just awesome, man. I love this convention. When I say it's crazy, it's because I'm just really busy, and it's the best. Like just talking to fans that I get to see all the time, and meeting new people, seeing friends again. I've seen you guys in forever.
Yeah,
and doing panels and such. It's
funny how Comic Cons, the more successful they are, the more wrecked you are.
Yeah,
it's like a very like strange balance.
Yeah, I know, and I meet more creators than I knew last time, and I you never see them except for the shit like this, right? And so yeah. Like you get together and you're seeing your friends for the first time, and especially now.
Yeah.
Now that we've won COVID and COVID is over,
yeah. We did it.
We finally get to hang out again, guys. Everything's good.
Yeah,
hooray! I'm not worried about anything.
Exactly.
I also imagine it's a pretty big difference going back a couple of years when you're coming here with great work, but not necessarily with like Action Comics and Hulk and all of these books behind you. Has that changed how fans interact with you at all?
Yeah, for sure. Because I mean, yeah, before. It's always awesome to see people who've read your stuff, and if they read your creator own work, like, oh, I really like this little book that almost nobody bought, but I did, and I loved it. That's the best. But now you got people who are just like dyed-in-the-wool Hulk fans, or people who've been reading Action Comics since like the 60s or whatever, and now you're a part of that, and there's they'll bring you like. You know, people will bring you a Captain America shield with all these people who've written Cap. Now you get to be on that thing, or like their Superman T-shirt when they were a kid, or that's just awesome. Yeah, it's just a whole different thing. People talk to you for different reasons. Sometimes it's about a book they love. Sometimes it's about a character they love, or about the fact that you're local and they know you, or whatever. Like it just adds more reasons that people might talk to you.
I've been wanting to ask you about Action Comics for a long time because it's such a big story that you've already told, and now it's expanded even more, I feel like. Such a big swing. How did it feel sort of in the middle of the... I guess you're still in the middle, technically, but in the middle of the beginning.
The middle of the Warworld saga?
Yes.
It was kind of a struggle because they let me do this big, long-form thing.
Yeah.
And honestly, longer form than they were comfortable with. They were like, did we do the right... Like, it was the fact that... It's this long, epic thing, and it's not... Yeah. Like, very often, comics are about... Even if you're writing to the trade, or if you have, like, a big umbrella arc thing in mind, it's still comics, and you kind of have to have some kind of a flash pow thing that month to make... Like, it's a team-up with whoever, or here's the new appearance of a... something or other, or the return of some beloved character. And on Warworld, it was mostly just like like chapters of a long ongoing story, and they were like, damn dude, when's Clark gonna get back? And I could feel a little bit of anxiety from above at DC, like, we gotta get Superman back to Earth and get things back to status quo. And there was a little bit of crossover from editorial, like an editor left during that time, and another editor left, and then I had three different like senior editors on that series,
right?
And whenever a new person came on, I would push back the goalpost a little bit longer.
Like, you're like, I see an opportunity.
Yeah,
here.
I was like, no, June. No. It should have been August. Like, well, what about September? Like, whenever there's transition, I'll push it up. Because they sent me up there with the whole Grant Morrison Authority team. That's a big-ass cast.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I didn't want it to be for nothing. I wanted them all to have their own arc, you know, something to do and not just be kind of in the background. So there were all these subplots, and it was big. There's a lot of moving parts to that story. So I kept trying to make sure that the story was long enough to do all those characters
right
justice.
And I feel like in other, like, big arcs like this, there's another book where Kal-El Superman is still doing normal Superman stuff, and you were it. So I feel like that's where maybe a lot of that sort of stress came from on
yeah.
their end.
Yeah, for sure.
You were driving him for so long.
Yeah, thanks. I love the Werewolf Saga. I'm super proud of it, but it's also really exciting to have him back to Earth now and be able to, especially now that we kind of got him back in the glasses and the hat and all that. It's just so goddamn exciting. This next issue is about to drop. There are these just beautiful Christopher Reeve-esque moments of him being a reporter, like being the shy, meek farm boy guy. While the bully guy kind of pushes him around, and he's like, "Oh, I'm just so polite." And I don't know, just those moments in the bullpen that are so charming, and like the feel good, you know, Superman talking to the. There's a moment I've been waiting to do forever. In which Superman is hanging out with an ex-con that he put away, who is now his friend. This guy that he put away back in the day, who went on to, get his life together because of Superman's intervention. The guy that, once he was like a henchman for Toyman or whatever. It never really says who he was exactly, but just some dirtbag that got put away, but now he got out and got his life together, and now they just hang out and have lunch together sometimes. And it's like, I want, like, kind of my answer to the Grant Morrison, like, jumper scene.
Right.
I just wanted to see Superman being super in a quiet, inspirational, just sitting and sharing a sandwich kind of a way.
Dude, you're going to get me choked up, man. Yeah, this is so beautiful to hear you talk about him this way. This is it's really awesome.
Thanks, man.
I feel like because you started in something so different from the normal Superman status quo, now you're like sneaking up on all the different iconic pieces one at a time. Is that like intentional?
Yeah, totally.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I wanted to bring back I know we all kind of have our era when we came on, whether we got attached to Superman through Christopher Reeve or Smallville or Henry Cavill or whatever our touchstone stuff is. For me, it's Christopher Reeve. Not in a way that it has to, you know. Sometimes people get combative, like, no, man. Like, your way sucks and this one's the best. And it's all beautiful. For me, Christopher Reeve, those movies are not perfect, but his depiction of Superman, for me, was perfect.
Great.
And I want to hear John Williams' music in the book. You know?
Oh, that's so cool.
And there's this great spread in the opening scene of 1057 where, and I had to kind of fight for it, where I wanted, you know, usually you see the credit page where there's the cluster of credits all together in one spot on the page. I was like, can we do a two-page spread where it's like panel to panel, we see Superman flying through Metropolis being awesome, like righting little wrongs or helping people. And we see, like, a couple of names in the panel and then a couple more in the next panel, like, opening credits.
Yeah.
Oh, nice. Yeah.
And they're like, we can't do that. I'm like, tell me why.
Yeah.
And I'm like, you're going to go to comics jail? It's like, this goddamn comic book.
What rules are we talking about?
Yeah, like, so we did it. And they're like, yeah, okay, fine. So we did it. And Rafa, without being told, Rafa added this beautiful little film. You see the... forgive me, I'm drawing a blank on the word, but you see the film along.
Oh, like the film, like the strip?
The literal
on the
film
side.
Strip, yeah. Like at the
celluloid?
In the gutters, yeah. You see the little celluloid in the gutters.
Like, cool.
I didn't even tell him that's what I was going for, but he totally got it and did it.
That's really
that.
Cool.
It's so dope.
One of the big things, though, that you've done in terms of Superman, and it's not exactly tweaked the mythology, but looked at it in a different way, is there's a lot of super people. He came back from Warworld with two kids. You have multiple scenes, both in Action Comics and in Superman as well, but a little less so there, of the whole super family hanging out together in the apartment and interacting, and that's really become a big function of it. Why was that important, and how does that change how you approach Superman, who for a very long time was a lone character, the lone survivor of Krypton?
Yeah, the super family, in a way, is kind of a way to... one of several ways in which we are differentiating between the Superman and the action books. The Josh book is very clearly focusing on Superman. There's a lot of Lois in it too, but it's a Superman book. And I wanted this one to be almost like a homage to the old 80-page, 100-page giants.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Where you'd feel... They had the Bat Family ones, too, where you'd get a story about Batman or about Superman, and then you'd get a team-up with a couple of the teenage characters, or you'd see Supergirl fighting, you know, Benedict Arnold or whatever. You know, those Silver Age books.
And Benedict Arnold won. He cheated, but he won in that issue. I don't know.
Yeah, he's... He's tough, man.
Yeah,
if things gone a little bit different, if he hadn't had that loyalist wife, you know, like it's okay. Now we're getting into the weeds. Yeah. Anyway, where was I?
I was asking you about what keeps Superman special if he has this whole family.
Oh, I see. Yeah, it is a challenge of the book to keep Superman very much as the nucleus of the book while making sure all the other characters get their time on the page.
Right.
So we're kind of bringing some character, like a little, you know, B plot, C plot to the fore and then back into the background again, and making sure that those other characters that are not hit on necessarily are getting time in the backups and everything is kind of getting some love. It always has to be a Superman story at its core, but the B plot and C plot stuff informs his character. There's actually one that we're about to do. Well, one that we just did was very important between John, his son John, and yeah. Osel, the little boy that he brought home. Because Jonathan, like, there's, you know, the stuff that happened with him aging up that we have not seen dealt with really emotionally, and I wanted to see John now. John's, you know, taking it like a champ the whole time, but now he sees these kids here at the age at which he lost that time with his own folks, and he kind of feels replaced. He's kind of bummed out, even though he's still got it. He's very magnanimous to the kids and tries to be welcoming, but deep, deep down, he's, like, sad about it.
Well, that's what I love about that, because everyone's being good, but there's still conflict.
Yeah.
And I think that's one of the hardest things to write about Superman is, like, and the Super Family is, like, everyone's pretty good, so how do you find conflict?
How do you show the drama? Yeah.
Yeah,
totally. And there are little ways where... You know, the thing between John and Osel was a way to kind of inform Superman's character, like to see him dealing with that, to see him dealing with them having that stress between them. It kind of keeps it being about Superman in a way. Kara, to me, has always been, even though she's the younger cousin or whatever, we all know she's technically the older cousin, and she's the only one who really remembers Krypton. She's like the torchbearer from Krypton. Who actually remembers that place and lost everyone she ever knew. And I see her very differently than somehow she is depicted. I love that they kind of treat her like the wise old matriarch in a way, even though she's practically a teenager. That's an important part of it. And the same thing with Connor and Kenan are kind of, they're good, but they're also scrappy and kind of, they're like bros, and they kind of have that ego to them, and that's been really fun to show, especially in Night Terrors. Night Terrors was a really great opportunity to kind of flesh out the... that cast to show like the L kids
right.
in the context of like a, you know, Freddy Krueger film. We got to see him like play out their personal character.
You brought back Hank Henshaw for that Cyborg Superman, yeah. who is terrifying in this Night Terror stuff.
Yeah.
What is it that draws you to him as a villain in particular? Is it just the body horror of it, or is there more
yeah.
to it?
I mean, well, basically, yeah. I mean, every villain to a super, every superhero villain should be a mirror image of that hero in some way. With Mongol was the opposite of the Superman mission statement from Action One. Action One describes him as the champion of the oppressed. And if that is true, then the ultimate oppressor should be his opposite, like the guy who's the intergalactic slaver who's got this cult of slavery and dominance. On this other world where it's all about the chains and everything, that's his opposite. Metallo was his opposite in a much more visual kind of sense, where there's all this iconography of Superman deflecting bullets or smashing the gun in the guy's hand or whatever. And Metallo is the living gun, the gun that dreamt it was a man. We see his background where as basically a good kid who just became addicted to the idea of power through a gun, and his whole life just more and more became that gun over time. So he is that gun that we see Superman fighting all the time in those single images. Hank Henshaw, and I also try to avoid having like the cackling pure evil guy, but Henshaw is that crazy guy who just blames everything that ever happened to him on Superman. Like he has just built himself around the concept of getting revenge on Superman for what he blames on him, even though it wasn't his fault. in his mind, he's so crazy to him. Superman is the only thing that ever did anything bad to him, and he's everything evil, and all he can do is just crush everything Superman represents, to the point where he has built himself this fake, hideous Superman body. He is the closest thing to a pure evil villain that Superman has in my mind.
Yeah. I had a quick question about Superman just before we... Josh has been building up this Brainiac something in the background of a lot of his titles, not just Superman stuff. Is that something that's going to start leaking into Action Comics at any point?
Not in the arc that's about to begin. Like the Brainiac stuff that's coming. Man, what do I say without spoiling the shit out of it? I probably shouldn't talk about it.
All right.
There won't be a lot of. I do like using a lot of connective tissue everywhere, but in this particular arc, there's such a clear mission for these issues. There's not really room to introduce and there's also an alien threat. It would just be a little tacked on. So there's not a lot of that in this arc.
That was well danced around.
Thanks.
You had mentioned Night Terrors. We love the Night Terrors event. Such a cool thing. Is that something when you're working on a comic and then DC's like, oh, by the way, we're going to do this event. Do you want to do any stuff with it, or how does it kind of work?
That I will. Hopefully, I don't get in trouble for saying this, but when that came along, it came along a little bit late notice. They were like, we're going to do this thing in the summer. It's going to be called Night Terrors, and it's about a Freddy Krueger style horror story. Some people were like, what? This is right in the middle of my thing. And I'm like, whatever, dude, just do it. I love that kind of stuff. And I was already kind of figuring out how to wrap it up with Henshaw, because I wanted Henshaw to be the guy behind the guy, the scary thing behind the villain. And I was, while I was sorting out how to do those reveals and make it all feel very paid off and not just have someone disappear at the end, Night Terrors came along. I was like, oh, my God, that's perfect. So then I can make Henshaw the big bad of the... He's like the perfect Freddy Krueger for these two issues. Because we could introduce the bad guy, scare the crap out of the kids, because they're new to this whole scene. They're like, oh, this is like my dad, except he's this awful thing. And so he's also having literal nightmares about him. And then we get to bring out this boogeyman for two issues. It was perfect timing, and I love that stuff anyway.
I feel like, at least when I read your work, it feels like you think through it. It's so thoughtfully made. So when you're throwing something like Night Terrors, are you like, I have to go for a walk immediately and think about this intensely? Or I guess the real question is, how do you work to get that depth to what you're writing? And when you get thrown a curveball, how do you react?
There was a curveball, and I had to kind of figure out how we were going to address it. But this con is my first time meeting Bendis in person.
Oh, wow.
And we did several panels together, and something that he talks about a lot, he teaches in Portland, teaches a comics class. And in that class and here, he talks about yes-anding everything and not being like...
It's an improv.
Exactly. He is all about improv. He talks about... He is obsessed with SNL. He's obsessed with improv, to a depth to which I do not understand. He's like, I'm a complete layman, and he's like way into it. It talks about yes ending. It's the thing, he's a touchstone thing he comes back to a lot, where it's in this shared universe that we do, and whenever we're doing DC or Marvel stuff, it's this big ass sandbox where everyone's playing with the same toys at once sometimes. And whenever somebody else adds a thing, you can't, it's best not to be like, no, you can't, it breaks everything I'm doing. Instead, it's like, cool, how do we make that work? I mean, I experienced that most intensely when Grant was doing Superman of the Authority while I was doing my stuff. Grant was like, I want to do this. I'm not going to tell Grant Morrison shit.
Hey, no.
Yeah, right.
No, Grant.
Yeah. So we just like, cool, whatever. We're going to make it work. And it made some really creative choices for me. And also, Grant also adjusted and made it work, for me too. He was super, thoughtful about all that. As far as how to try to tell the smart version of a thing, I try to be mindful of the theme underneath the whole thing. Like, what's this about? Like, the thing that's driving every page ultimately towards the end. For Metallo, it was the concept of the kid who found a gun and for the rest of his life became that gun. Mm-hmm. And creatively is a living gun himself. that was the thing that drove the whole thing. I find giving him motivation so he's not just like, ha ha, I'm a bad guy and I look cool. I'm a Terminator, but I have kryptonite in my chest. I wanted to make it like, yeah, but who gives a shit? Like, why do you want what you want?
Yeah.
So, yeah, finding the theme at the center of it, and then the character arcs above that, and then the minutiae above that. Like if the story is an ice sculpture, it's chainsaw first, you know, and not just scalpel the whole way like I used to. Chainsaw first, and then chisel, then scalpel at the end.
Nice. I want to ask you about Hulk, if we can turn to
that for a second. Please.
So... Yeah. And I don't mean this derisively to anybody, but when we read the first issue of that, it felt like you read a Mortal Hulk that everybody's like, this is the horror Hulk, and you're like, cool, but here's the real horror Hulk.
Hold my beer, horror Hulk.
That's right. That's adorable, Al Ewing. Let's do this. Let's try this again.
Yeah. Well, what was the motivation behind it?
Okay, so they came to me to do Hulk, and I had just let go of Alien, and I loved Alien.
Believe me, we could tell you loved it.
Oh, thank you.
Just the reading of it and the back pages and stuff, I was like, wow, this guy loves this.
I do, man. I do. It still hurts my heart to let go of it. I love those films, except for 4. And I just wanted, the mission statement for that was for me, I want to make these stories that feel like they belong on the shelf with the movies, you know? Like, yeah. I want to feel like the movies in comic form. But I just was utterly out of bandwidth, and I was like, I just need to breathe. I feel like I'm pretty soon, the cracks are going to start to show in my work, and I got to find some space, so I let go. It's been 2 years. I was very proud. We did 3 solid arcs. It was beautiful. I was happy with it. Walked away. And they're like, do you want to do Hulk next? And I was not expecting that call.
Yeah.
You know, but, like, I mean, I do like Hulk, but I don't like every Hulk run ever. I got my favorites.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I was like, damn, dude, I don't think I can say no to Hulk. Because it's Hulk, the beauty of Hulk, the genius of the Hulk concept is in the simplicity and the complexity underneath it. It's like, it's around midnight. You know, like, it's this beautiful melody that any little kid can hear and get. Be like, oh, cool. He gets angry, he turns into a big rage monster. I get it. That's awesome. But the deeper you look into the concept, the more nuance you can find or make in it, and the more it can mean anything. It can be a metaphor for your own rage issues, or for addiction, or for child abuse, or for substance abuse, or for, there's so much you can do with it.
Yeah,
and it's been done so effectively so many different ways. And as far as the tone of it, though, man, Immortal Hulk is just like top shelf. Mm-hmm. I just thought it was so effective. As a Hulk, as a horror vehicle, to me it was so effective that it's going to steer the Hulk mythos at least somewhat from now on. I think it should anyway.
Right.
It's just so effective. It's like you can't imagine Swamp Thing not being a spooky book. Like it's going to be hard to imagine Hulk not having an element of creepiness to it from now on.
That's just, sorry to interrupt you, but it's really interesting to hear you say that and thinking about, like, reading the Peter David run, which is, like, crazy different. And you can't be like, all right, we're jumping back to the Pantheon for the next arc. Like, that's insane now. You're right.
In my opinion, yeah. For me personally, that's what I just missed Immortal. I thought it was amazing. And but the Donnie run actually introduced some elements. Like, okay, well, now Hulk and Banner legit hate each other. Like, Hulk has a reason to deeply hate Banner now.
Yeah.
So I kind of thought with it. The biggest challenge was, how do I not just ape Immortal? Because it was perfect. Like, how do I not just do that again? My way into that was... So I had to kind of sit with it. I did not say yes immediately. You know, I figured I would. I was like, well, what am I going to do? It's not just going to be a ripoff of Al... And I decided my way in would be, rather than the black science horror take where it's like Cronenberg, like a dark laboratory type shit, like what if we do more like a folk horror kind of thing where it's...
Like Taylor Swift's Folklore.
Exactly. Like Taylor Swift take on Hulk. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Hulk Taylor's version.
Have you guys read Hellboy, the Crooked Man? Remember that story that Richard Corbin did?
Yeah,
it's very much inspired by that.
Okay,
like, if I had to kind of boil it down to one inspiration, it's Hellboy, Crooked Man, but also Hellboy in general. The way that Hellboy tends to just kind of roam through the world of myth and folklore and cosmic horror, and these things kind of find him, and he sees these aspects to the world to which the rest of us are blind. So now we kind of got Hulk on this, like, Bill Bixby-style walkabout, but through the American South, like the Southern Gothic style dark stuff, and I got to add all these things to the Marvel bestiary. So I'm adding tons and tons of monsters in the way
awesome.
That, I mean, we're bringing out things from yesteryear that we don't see anymore. Mm-hmm. As we saw in that last page of issue one, where we see Man-Thing come out, and we see Ghost Rider, which we're about to see a new Ghost Rider that I'm super stoked
that's
about.
That's awesome.
But also all these creatures that have kind of been in the back of my mind. Actually, my first Marvel story ever was a 10-pager called War Devil. And it tells the story of PTSD as an African folk monster, basically. Like this thing that this thing that passes through spilled blood. And like the first hunter of men, you know, that comes from the African plains when men first showed up. And there's this thing that hates mankind more than anything, and it's the thing that war comes from.
Yeah.
And it's the thing that PTSD it survives in the world as PTSD. Like,
oh, wow.
Somebody sees or experiences something super fucked up, and they get blood splashed on them, and then it passes to them, and then they're broken, and then they break someone else, and that's this thing called the War Devil. Jeannie DeGaulle, the War Devil. And we're about to see that as a creature in Hulk now.
Ooh. Yeah, it was a 10-pager. How did you fit a story? That sounds like such an intense concept.
It was
a lot.
It was actually based on. Sorry if I'm getting this. This story is less fun, but I actually, yeah, this is pretty dark. But I got it. I knew an Army Ranger who has since died. Who his whole job for deployment after deployment after deployment was to go over there. He was with a team of Rangers. And they would go on these night raids and just kill bad guys in their sleep every day for, like, months at a time. And he told me the story and what that was like. And so I took that 10-pager. I took that idea and I kind of used it to tell a story of what PTSD is through the lens of folklore. And we see an Army Ranger squad doing that throughout the night. And and something happens on this particular... As the one guy is narrating in his inner monologue, so we're hearing his inner monologue while we're seeing another story play out from his perspective. And at first, it's like you don't understand how they relate until the end, and they kind of come together, and you see what the War Devil is.
Well, to that point, and I don't know if you can get into this because it feels like this is something this story is working up to. Every Hulk story has its own take on the Hulk Banner dichotomy, like what they mean to each other, where it comes from, how it ties together. We talked about the Peter David thing. Obviously, he dug very heavily into abuse and that there. What's your take on that? Is that something that is coming up? Do you feel like it's already present in the book? Who is Hulk and who is Banner?
There's the point of departure in issue one is that Hulk hates Banner now. And he's done with this whole song and dance. He's like, okay, this body is mine now. I'm just going to keep coming. Like, you locked me up in your mind and enslaved me, turned me into this thing, and now, like, I'm out, and now you're the one who's screwed. And now I'm the one who's going to lock you up. So now Banner, it becomes like a movie. It goes back to the Hulk's movie monster roots. It was always supposed to be like a Frankenstein / Jekyll and Hyde thing, and then over the years it kind of became more of a superhero kind of book, but the roots are in horror that Al Ewing tapped into so effectively, like a movie monster type thing. So this is a movie, like a horror movie, in which Hulk is the monster of the film, like the thing from It Follows or The Ring or Smile, where the thing is the monster is behind your eyes, like hunting you. So Banner is on the road like Bill Bixby was, and he's just kind of on the road, and if it's not the old "you wouldn't like me when I'm angry" thing. Instead, it's anytime Banner gets too close to making a friend or having a moment's peace or finding love or somebody's nice to him, or he's almost found this thing that he's working towards. He sees like a pair of green eyes in the shadows and starts to run, and then like he blacks out and he wakes up and he's in a pile of green vomit and a half-eaten deer and sirens are going and dogs are barking. He's like, oh my God, what happened? Like the whole "what did I do last night" addiction thing.
Yeah. It's like a Bruce Banner prank show.
Yeah,
it's
right.
Like, ha-ha, check that
gotcha.
Out.
Gotcha. Yeah, it's... Yeah.
You ate a deer. Ha-ha.
I wanted to play up the body horror aspect of the transformations a lot, but I also wanted to have... I mean, all of this can relate to, like, if only I could get control of this thing about myself that I hate.
Yeah.
Like, if only I could... stop gambling, or if I could stop drinking, or if I could, you know, not get so angry at whoever at work, or if I could deal with this thing that I hate about myself. So it's just kind of like this guy is running from his own compulsions, and when he thinks he has it under control, it comes out and breaks everything.
Well, and I feel like one of the things that I loved, and I think it was the first issue, when the Banner's bleeding, you see the transformation start in the blood first.
Yeah.
And I was like, that's sick. And that sort of, like, body horror that you just don't see coming that way.
Yeah, man. Nick Klein's art is just crushing it. That guy is a virtuoso.
Anything else you want to plug? Anything else coming out? I mean, obviously, we've talked a lot about these two books, but...
Yeah, well, I mean, about the Banner thing, I don't want people to think that the Hulk is the villain. The challenging thing about Hulk is that the relationship between him and Banner is, like, rough right now, where Hulk, Banner is terrified of him, and he's on the run like he should be from a monster, like a movie monster. But in the end, both Banner and Hulk... it is in them inherently to do good things, whether even if it's like accidental or begrudgingly, or Banner still means very well, and Hulk, even though he does not think of himself as a hero and he kind of wants to be left alone, ultimately he's going to save the person in trouble. He's like, you're going to see these two people who are completely at odds, still kind of collectively making up the hero of the story that I'm really excited about. And Charlie, the girl, is kind of the way through which we see those relationships. I want somebody else that gets to interact with both and has different relationships with each. You know, so, man, I'm just so excited about that book. I'm driven by the art of Nick Klein. I'm just writing every word for that guy. Travel Foreman is doing the art of issues 4 and 5, and there will be either him or others will do other fill-in art arcs as Nick gets caught up. But I just couldn't be more excited about that book. Aside from Action and Hulk, Green Lantern War Journal is about to come out.
Oh, yeah.
With John Stewart. I'm super stoked about that one, too. To me, John Stewart is the consummate Green Lantern, and in a way, the consummate superhero. He's the guy that was made a superhero, immediately threw his mask off. Like, I don't need this. I'm John Stewart, Green Lantern. I'm going to do what's right. I'm not going to hide from anybody. Inspired by his civil rights mother, which gives him that inherent distrust of masks, and he's like, I'm a hero, I don't care who knows it, I'm gonna do what's right. So I'm super proud of that book. I'm writing 007 right now.
Yeah.
That's been really fun. This like has a statement about patriotism that means a lot to me, especially now that word's kind of, you know, up for grabs of various groups. You know, like what does it mean to be a patriot? Like an actual patriot and not a Nazi that says that.
Yeah.
And what does it mean to be someone who's served your country's government and your country's war machine in a way now that defense contractors are becoming a bigger part of it, and now that, it's not always a war between ideology. Sometimes it's a war between various bottom lines and oligarchs and corporations. And so, yeah, anyway, 007 for King and Country is coming out now. And I'm doing a Creator Own coming out soon.
Really?
Yeah.
I'm super fucking stoked about it. It's I shouldn't get into too many details, but it's coming out probably early next year. It's like a psychological thriller, somewhere between Nightcrawler and Breaking Bad, I would say.
Wow!
And you're gonna love it.
That's awesome. How far along in the process are you?
The first script and change are done. The artist is attached, but not yet begun. It's very early.
Oh, nice.
But it's going to look super dope.
Oh, that's awesome.
You're going to love it.
I'm so excited.
Can't wait.
Thank you so much for coming on. Always a pleasure
always awesome
chatting
to see
with
you guys. I always love hearing the show.
Oh my gosh. Thanks. We love talking to you.
And if you'd like to support this podcast and all the podcasts we do, patreon.com/comicbookclub. Also, we do a live show every Tuesday night at 7 p.m. to Facebook and YouTube. Come hang out. We would love to chat with you about comics. Apple, Android, Spotify, or the app of your choice to subscribe, listen, and follow the show at Comic Book Live on Twitter, Comic Book Club Live on TikTok or Instagram, comicbookclublive.com for this podcast, and many more. Until next time, we'll see you at the comic book shop.
Once a week, that blows your